While a lot of eyes have been on the Middle East these days, and especially the possibility of ending the Israel-Gaza war and Trump's so-called 20-point peace plan and whether or not the Israeli side will accept it, etc., there has been additional activity going on in the Russia-Ukraine war that I don't want to leave you in the dark about. There has been basically an intensification of the energy war that's going on. We've always focused on what's been going on the front lines or even in the air over Ukraine. And while those are still both at play, there has been a renewed focus lately on both sides to be striking the energy resources of the other side in an attempt to drain the other side of the energy necessary to continue fighting at the front lines. We're going to take a look and see what the ramifications of all this are and how serious any of these things are. And if this is bringing us any closer to peace with Andrei Mardianov, one of our favorite guests here, especially who's an expert in things about the Russian military, veteran author of Russian and Russian military expert, host of the YouTube channel Smoothie X12. Andrei, as always, welcome back.
Oh, my pleasure, Danny. My pleasure.
Listen, always glad to have you on with your unique views, because you're such an expert in a lot of these things on the Russian side, much more than we are who, you know, don't speak the language. And so I kind of want to get your idea on a lot of these things here today, because really a lot is going on, which potential ramifications, or maybe a lot of it's just bluster. We'll find out where we get into. Let's start, first of all, with the Ukraine side, because up until maybe 6 months or so ago, it was just Russia just relentlessly pummeling the air and hitting Ukraine infrastructure. The last two winters in particular, Russia had started kind of a campaign to limit and to harm the Ukraine's ability to either have energy for war-making materials, moving things around with infrastructure, or just being able to heat during the winter. And at least as I interpret it, there was some modest success in that, but not a whole lot. And then the winter itself, especially last winter, wasn't really all that difficult. But this year, and we're going to start off, well, things have been changing in that now all of a sudden, the last 6 months or so, the Ukraine side has been getting into the fray, and they have been having some success. And in fact, overnight, or I guess last night, the previous night, Belgorod was actually hit. And I believe it was for the second time that the thermal power plant was hit, which knocked a lot of it out. And Zelensky is warning a lot more of this is to come. Russia has repeatedly targeted Ukraine's power grid, gas facilities, and heating systems ahead of winter, aiming to take living conditions unbearable for civilians. But now here comes the Ukraine side. What do you make of this focus and escalation really on both sides of the energy war?
Well, well, you know, I'm military professional, former, you know, although people say once you stay military professional, and I don't listen to headlines. I look at numbers. You know, that's what operational level officers are supposed to do. This is what, for example, well, most media don't have the ability to do because they never studied arithmetic. Forget about mathematics. Forget about operational art. So they are morons. We know that. And so, no, the problem
don't,
is...
Don't pull any punches. Tell me what you really think.
So, these Cretans, they need stories, so they pull. Yeah, Belgorod is the city of the 400,000 people. So, yes, they knocked out the substation 2 days ago. It limited their, basically, stopped the electricity for about 40,000 customers, and they restored it fast. But Belgorod was, it's a border town, border city, actually. It's a pretty significant city. And yeah, they were just doing this nonstop. What is the problem with these people, including what you are going to throw at me down the road here in this podcast with all those Ben Hodges, Petraeuses, and everything. So is the fact that they can claim whatever they want, but problem is Russians do get, you know, liquor once in a while. For example, like they get some drone which flies into, for example, into Tatarstan or Bashkiria, hits some kind of their pipes in, let's say, 600 hectares, which is 1,500 acres refinery. And, you know, what they make, they do just picture. Reality is, most of the drones, I would say more than 95-96%, are shut down. They do get once in a while some liquor, like what you showed there. It's Evpatoria abandoned refinery. It's not operational. There are some, you know, remnants of all kinds of the byproducts of the refining of the oil. So, yeah, some of it got there, basically, you know, you know, fire, flame. And so in reality is there is not even comparison between what Russians...
And so there's not a comparison. I certainly agree with that. But there has, unless you're telling me these headlines are also spurious, is that there Russia has stopped exporting petroleum products, and they are rationing in some areas of the country as a result.
It's not anymore. There were some areas, there were shortages, for example, in Crimea. But I mean, this has been resolved. And they stopped export of oil and refined products such as gas. But we have to keep in mind, much of it is done not because of the shortages. It's already have been debunked many times. It has everything to do with actually export policies of Russia. And this has happened on the number of occasions. The reason I know this, because my friend is actually, he's pretty well-off guy. He is into business of export of the oil in Moscow. Mm. And so the point is that it has been done in 2018, it has been done in 2020, it has been done in 2021, it has been done to... Mm. So it is periodically goes in, and so it has very little to do with the much embellished, to put it mildly, in reality it's exaggerated, with some issues which are actually local issues. For example, like in Crimea. And Mr. Aksyonov, who is the head of Crimea Oblast, for example, he limited at some point of time their to 30 liters their gasoline in Crimea. Well, guess what? The prices immediately dropped, and now they don't have shortages at all. A lot of it is speculation, obviously. By then, well, I'm sorry to say it, my friend also into this speculation. He made a fortune, actually, doing this. So, Russia is capitalist. I'm sorry to say that, but it's a free enterprise. And guess what? Yes, their oil and refined products are a huge deal for many people who make fortunes. They believe really well. Let's put it this way.
Let me ask you something. I want to say it may have been around October, November 2023 is when Russia, at least as I asserted it, really began a pretty consistent long-range drone and missile strikes throughout Ukraine, and that was going on periodically. Especially that first winter, they were really doing a lot to try and knock out the energy, the power facilities, the substation, et cetera. And at least that first year, Ukraine was pretty successful at getting them repaired pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so I'm asking you now that the Ukraine side has really started at least having some success, to what extent has the Russian side been able to repair the damage that it has caused?
Oh, really fast. Again, make no mistake. For example, if that's how it happens, one drone gets in, for example, in Tatarstan. It hits some facility because it's a drone. It carries about 400 kilograms of the explosives and or TNT, whatever the hell they put in there. And so it hits some kind of facility there. It catches fire. Then they shoot fire. Obviously, they have their assets on the ground. That's what they do. There are many cells, both terrorist and intelligence cells. And they sell it to West and, you know, as the success. Reality is nobody explains to people that, for example, most of refineries are the area of the refineries. For example, one like in Tatarstan or in Luga, in Leningrad Oblast. It's about 600 hectares, which is 1,500 acres. Can you imagine what you need to blow this up? You need consistent, composite strike. Ukraine is incapable of delivering it. What they can do, as always, get one leaker, one, two leakers. Well, any air defense. Yeah, it's like in Yevpatoria, in Crimea. They caught the remnants of some, you know, what was remaining of this abandoned, not refinery, it was actually storage. And so it has to be understood in terms of the scale. And if you look attentively at the reports of Russian air defense, it's consistent effectiveness of 95 to 96%, depending on the type also of the weaponry which Ukraine throws at Russia. And in this case, we're looking not just the incomparable things. It's just not even fair to compare. Because just yesterday, again, so you have 750 geraniums, 50 cruise missiles, two Kinjals, 802 standoff weapons. I'll give you their number if anybody ever doubts it. But again, in the West, it's just completely brainwashed and lives in the, you know, this alternative universe. It's about 10% effectiveness of all air defense assets in Ukraine. So, yeah, they shoot down some uraniums. They can shoot down. They are not very successful shooting down their cruise missiles, including the KH-101, including 3M14 calibers, which are subsonic, or albeit very long-range missiles. They have zero success shooting down anything which is hypersonic, like zero. There is no. I mean, they sell this garbage to all kinds of the imbeciles from mainstream media and politicians. But then again, you cannot explain imbecile that he's imbecile because he's imbecile. You know, so you cannot explain to these people that what they observe is absolutely some kind of the, you know what, made up picture by Zelensky and his gang and those Nazis. But reality is, and here is the thing, which I don't know, we have to state it. Look up his latest statements from yesterday. He wants now the what? Truce. Air truce. Why? He called on Russia to stop it. Well, Russians are not stopping it. So Russia doesn't call on him to stop it. So it's obvious what is going on there. But as many times have been stated, reality is what is happening, and I'm on the record, and you can quote me on that. Average American of Western Georgia is a war criminal. The reason they are war criminals is because they are producing this Gibsonian propaganda supporting the Nazi regime, which is at the end of its line, basically. And they, in 1945, starting from 1945, we had the Nuremberg process, which, of course, the Nazi war criminals have been judged there, including those people who were directly involved in the propaganda. Average American mainstream media is a propaganda outlet for Nazis. They were also very silent in terms of Gaza until it really hits the news. And it was all delivered by passing all of them. It was delivered by honest, alternative, and independent journalists who were saying things. So the picture they draw and support, make no mistake. Average national security guy in Washington, D.C. will love nothing more than see more Russian civilians, children, women killed. That's who they are. They are, well, genocidal maniacs, because they are also very much under the basically press, if you wish, under the pressure of the lost wars, basically what United States have been paraded in the last, I don't want to go there with the Trump administration. Yeah. It was humiliation of the, which, by the way, U.S. Army didn't deserve to be humiliated this way, you know, for all failures of the American military. But the point is, they turned the country into the laughing stock, so they now have to cope, and as a result, they create alternative universe. What else do you want to do? American general, as I already stated, is a meme in Russia. It used to be the British scientists, which British scientists discovered that you cannot do anything with water because it's wet. You know, so that's pretty much the same. American general is the guy who has no clue, actually, what real operational art is. They don't understand mathematics of it all. They don't understand operational planning. And so as a result, the only thing which they are left is the only thing which they can do. And whatever they and what they have been doing for generations, they lie. That's what they do. And as a result, Zelensky yesterday, let's, you know, get the truth and let's kind of stop this. Well, no, Russia is not stopping, and that's it. It's the news.
Well, you know? And in fact, you mentioned Zelensky. One of the other things he said yesterday was directly about all of these long-range strikes and on the energy infrastructure, et cetera. I think he had more harsh things to say against the West than he did against Russia.
Yeah, of course.
Але, на жаль, не всі. Майже 40 ракет різних типів, майже 450 безпілотників збили. На жаль, немає достойної, сильної реакції світу на все те, що відбувається. На постійне збільшення масштабу і наглості ударів. І саме тому Путін це робить, він просто сміється із Заходу, із того мовчання та відсутності сильних дій у відповідь. Росія відкинула всі пропозиції зупинити війну, чи хоча б зупинити удари. Росія відверто намагається знищити нашу цивільну інфраструктуру. саме зараз, перед зимою, газову інфраструктуру, генерацію, передачу електрики. Нуль реальної реакції світу. Ми будемо боротися, щоб світ все ж таки не мовчав.
So for those who may not have been able to read of that, he's basically complaining that the West hasn't effectively gone to war against Russia because of what they've been doing. And Russia just doesn't want to talk peace. They're just, all they want to do is just go to war, and they don't even want to talk seriously about peace. But I think actually the bigger message with those is that Russia is saying we can go to peace on our terms, or this will accelerate. How do you see it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean, it has been this from the get-go. Another matter that after Istanbul in 2022, if you read my latest book, obviously, which came out last year, it's the special military operation didn't start until the first days of April 2022. Before that, it was demonstration of force primarily, you know, that just to make sure that Ukrainians go and sit in Istanbul at the table. Then we have Boris Johnson on behalf of Biden administration going there and sabotaging it. And that's when the Russians said, okay, they want to fight. And that was the mood from the get-go. This is when Putin comes in and tells Gerasimov, untie yourself from the calendar. You have as many years, as many months to do what you need to do. Just do it. Just prosecute it the way you see it. And that's what was happening. And now it has to be understood. The people in the, for example, GO, which is a main operational directorate of the General Staff of Russian Federation. For first, most of those people are PhDs, actually, you know, in military sciences, and they handle their very good intelligence on, for example, economic, and they have actually separate department, economic department in the General Staff of Russia. There is like, and it's really massive. There are people also there, not only just officers, but there are obviously civilian part of it, but there are officers who also, apart from having PhDs in military science, they have PhDs in economics. And so as a result, they know the industrial and economic capability of the West. The West has been demilitarized. And this was the task after the April 2022, when it has become clear that the West will be supporting Ukraine first as a proxy, and then after that with the direct involvement. And then suddenly the political aims of the special military operations have been changed, not to defeat Ukraine. Ukraine is a virtual structure. It's non-existent. The whole country exists on the handouts and support from the West. Everybody knows this. I mean, remove money, remove support, it's gone. You know, it's just not going to exist. And so that was the change in the political aims of the war, which ended up, which I've been on the record nonstop. Russia is not fighting Ukraine. Russia is defeating, which already happened. Viktor Orban even admitted it's defeating NATO, period. Simple as that. And now Russians know exactly what is the capability, industrial capability, or rather lack thereof, of Europe. Europe is written off by Russians. And so in the United States, and we know that Trump, that's why Russians throw the bones to Trump periodically, including this, you know, like, yeah, United States is superpower, let's crawl out. And this is what was happening as of lately. Just crawl out of this, you know, crawl away from this whole thing. And Trump was washing hands of this conflict first, because United States simply cannot provide anymore anything, especially what is critical for them, which is air defense. Not that it was good to start with. And so, and Europe, yeah, they can scream, shout, whatever they want. They are industrially, scientifically, and militarily incompetent, and they cannot fight any kind of real serious war. It is all kabuki theater, because in the end, what you're going to do or what you're going to bring on the battlefield? Russians know, not much. You know, so that's,
yeah, certainly a lot has been given away. More, as you say, so much was given away in 2022 and 2023 that there just is incremental amounts left in any of the countries, even though they're trying to ramp up stuff. We haven't even backfilled what we've already given away, much less have enough to get forward. So in that regard, there's just not much left to even put in a tank. You mentioned operational art a second ago. We talked about what the Ukraine side is trying to do, but it's mainly, at least according to your view, basically headline deep, It's not actually anything that's going to cause genuine harm to the Russian side, but the Russian side has their own going on. Meanwhile, ABC News just reported here a couple of days back that that the Russians are in this particular day, they talked about how the Russians aimed 35 missiles and 60 drones at naphtha gas extraction and processing facilities in even central Poltava regions. Russia's Ministry of Defense said forces launched a mass strike using drones and guided missiles against Ukraine's military industrial complex and the gas and energy infrastructure that supports it. So what would you say is the operational art that the Russians are doing in their air campaign?
Well, it's a tightening of the noose on which Ukraine will be hung. And with it, the West, and there is a serious understanding. You see, for example, no ABC, which are also supporters of genocide of Russians, they love nothing more than that. Reality is, Mr. Tolstoy, by the way, great-grandson of Leo Tolstoy, he's a senator, and he probably going to be running for the president very soon, and he is outspoken man. He spoke to German media yesterday. No, not yesterday, 2 days ago. He already stated, we are done with Europe. It's over. We don't want to have anything to do with you. You are Satanist playground, and it's done. So now Russians have no economic incentives to do anything with Europe other than whatever Europeans want to do with Russians, which they still continue to buy Russian oil through India. So, right. Because if they stop, it's over. Russians also know that the United States, for all Trump's bluster, doesn't have enough liquefaction facilities and capability. Obviously, the United States can support itself, but there is not enough to sell even three times the price to Europeans. So Europe is doomed. And as such, Mr. Russians decided to go for the jugular this time. And for the last few days, you can see yourself. It's just utter destruction. Russians didn't touch, for example. That's another thing. There is this in Zaporozhye, they call it Zaporizhia. The plant, which is very famous in the world of aerospace engineering, which is called Motor Sich. Obviously, it's Soviet plant. I mean, Ukraine has never built anything there. But it's Soviet plant, Motor Sich, which was producing a very famous Ivchenko Progress engines, jet engines there. Jet engines which power, for example, largest cargo plane in the world, Antonov 124. And Chinese wanted to buy it 5 years back, the whole thing, because Chinese need the access to the more modern jet engines, commercial engines. United States sabotaged it, of course, you know. So, but Russians didn't touch Motor Sich before. Well, guess what? Starting from 2 days ago, they're blowing it to smithereens. So that tells you all those intentions. And yeah, it's just going for the jugular. And especially when you look attentively at the operational situation on the map and what is going on, especially, you know what, it's cauldron after cauldron. There is like five brigades demolished. You know, there is another three brigades demolished. Now you have about probably, give and take, nobody knows really exactly, 10,000 of best Nazi forces they have are stuck in the behind the Kliban reservoir. They are surrounded, and they have no way to escape it. And as a result, what's going to happen now? And keep in mind, Russians are keenly aware who plans those so-called operations. United States officially kind of, you know, washed off hands operationally and strategically about 2 months ago, or maybe a couple of months, I don't remember, then when they said that, British, it's your charge now, it's your thing. This is London. These are those incompetent and illiterate British planners who are now conducting this whole thing. Because United States needed to get the hell out of this fray, because obviously nobody wants to keep this paper back with the, you know, what kind of substance in the end. So British now do that, you know, and they, of course, this clown Zaluzhny and this, you know, butcher Sirsky, that's their level. As a result, if you look attentively at the map, the Russians do not want any kind of, you know, other new oblast for now, you know. They need to basically remove the regime. And after that, well, we know what's going to happen.
Well, let's take a look at what may happen on the other side of the line, because there are those And it's unclear to me. We can probably speculate whether some senior American, not officials, but opinion leaders. We'll call them opinion leaders. Former four-star and three-star generals. We're going to get to that in just a second. That they're basically seeing all this stuff going on, and they're seeing that at least the headlines in these big videos that Gary keeps showing, you know, like the big fire in Crimea and all that, right? So it's having success, and now Zelensky's reaching out and hurting the Russians. And so we have Ben Hodges actually tweeted out here. Yeah, I see. I probably should have put that warning even for this up, Gary. He writes that Russians are seemingly unable to stop this, supporting Ukraine's efforts to wreck Russian oil exports, including providing long-range precision strike capabilities, as well as disrupting the shadow fleet vessels in the Baltic Sea, will help bring a successful end to the war. Is there any possibility, and I'm going to ask you to just to take off your pro-Russian hat and just look at it pure to the numbers, is there a possibility, is there a case that with success enough that the West could bring Russia to its knees with disrupting its shadow fleet and cutting its oil exports that would make them come to an end the war according to Ukraine's preferences?
No. It's all wet fantasies by Ben Hodges. And again, he lies, and that's what he does. Again, you have to keep in mind, and I will repeat it again and again, American generals don't understand what strategy is. They don't understand what grand strategy is. They don't understand how Russia operates. They don't understand Russian economy. And as a result, it's not pro-Russian. Okay, let's imagine that. Okay, let me be a contrarian. Being contrarian, it doesn't mean that you have to be correct. You have to be correct. Ben Hodges is wet dreaming. He sees some plume of smoke, again, you cannot explain to this guy. He probably barely passed the mathematics in West Point, you know, and I doubt that it's a high-level math to start with, especially considering the latest situation, which we know what is happening in U.S. service academies. And so you cannot explain to moron that oil refinery like this one is at about 1,500 acres. So they hit one pipe, maybe one small refined tower. Okay, it stops for a couple of days. Refinery, reduces its refining. So the guy doesn't understand technology. He probably has degree. I don't know in what he has degree. In accounting, maybe that would help. But again, the problem is that it disrupts the flow, but it doesn't disrupt the supply in the end. It's just merely Russians are, as anybody in the world, they operate on strict time schedules. You refine so much oil, you load it, it being delivered to the whatever it is. Now, and as a result, yes, if the operation is disrupted for like 24, 48 hours, guess what happens? As anywhere in the world, backlog. So you have to basically load this oil and those products, gasoline, what have you, and it's kind of goes back, but it never disrupts the output in the general, operational and strategic sense. You cannot explain it to him. And then about Shadow Fleet, I won't take opinion of any American general seriously on any naval affairs. Russia has Navy. They never encountered other countries which had navies. Russia has a damn good Navy, the second Navy in the world. And so if need be, Russians will produce basically, which was being discussed, but it's escorts, convoys. Russians can do convoys. Do they want to assault Russian naval ship? Okay, so let them try, see what happens. This, we are observing things of which I was started writing already 8 years ago. It is incompetence, backward and coping on such a scale, it's unbelievable. And that is why when I say it, I do not try to embellish it. I mean it. And some of people who are my friends, they are laughing stock. Russians like openly laugh at them. It's just, and it's now openly now in the media and everything like, oh yeah, Ben Hodges, everybody. Ha, ha. Same goes to Petraeus. What the guy knows about war? He never saw one, And so as the result, we have this constant assault of all those statements, this, waving hands. And so the question is that those statements, they have nothing to do with the reality. Economic reality.
Speaking of that, you mentioned a second ago that if it gets bad enough, I guess Russia could start having patrols that go along with it, military patrols that go along with these.
Sure.
Is that just your idea that that's what they could do?
No.
Discussion of it.
If you take a look attentively at the activity of the Baltic Fleet, for example, there is a lot of movement in terms of the corvettes and frigates like New Strashimy and things of this nature, which Russians have been putting their surface fleet through the Danish Straits and into the Northern Sea and all over the place. And it will only increase. And now even as you can see, for example, the Pacific Fleet is now conducts constant patrols into the Southeast Asia. Just 3 days ago, the Marshal Shapochnikov and Gremyachi frigate and corvette, both carriers of the 3M22 hypersonic zircons, went on patrol. They went into East Asia through Sea of Japan, close to the what is called choke points, to make sure that the flow is good. You know, it could still be delayed and things of this nature, but they will be delivered. And same goes for the Baltic Fleet. And then there is, of course, Northern Fleet. That's the real fleet. I mean, and you can see yourself that the patrols have been consistent. Frigates of the class 22350 Gorshkov class have been on combat patrols nonstop. So it's Russians are putting the network of the surface fleets and, I mean, surface assets there. And yeah, if United States is not going to intercept it because obviously U.S. and Russia are on a completely different, you know, their footing there because they're two superpowers talking to each other. And even, you know, you can see kind of the trend between Russian and American, relations. But Europe, if British or French want to try, you know what happened with this French intercepting the Shadow Fleet tanker? Oh, there was a lot of talk about it. Well, in 48 hours, they let it go and without any.
Yeah. So because they never give that headline. That headline didn't make.
Yeah. Oh no, they never do those headlines.
Only the ones where they got it. Yeah.
And I can tell you one thing. Somebody from Moscow called Paris and said, "You want to play the game?" So Russia can sing Marine Royale in single salvo, all of it. And if France wants to play this, you know, so sure. But that's the whole point. World is not moved by the only thing they know how to do in NATO nowadays, propaganda. It is moved by the correlation of forces and means. And correlation of forces and means.
Okay. So speaking of correlation of forces, speaking of naval forces, and as you did a second ago, speaking of that well-known naval expert, David Petraeus, he has an idea. Here's a way that we could actually win the war. Check this out. Sorry, we just, as a public service to our viewers, unmanned killer submarines can win the war for Ukraine. Former CIA director insists Kiev could stop the Russians cold with explosive underwater drones. What say you?
I mean, it's a delirium of the incompetent man who doesn't understand modern war. He has no clue about the technological dimension of this war. He doesn't understand also that actually Russia is the leading power in the underwater drones, including some things which are horrendous, like Poseidon. Even when Poseidon is not nuclearly armed, even with the conventional explosives, which will several tons, it can basically destroy, it can destroy a group of ships. Forget about that. Just conventionally. Wow. So, and when he says this, it's desperation. That's what it is. Copium. I have a good, refined copium for sale. Just, you know what, cash payments only. So I can provide this. But yeah, the guy, I mean, they don't even understand evidently that they humiliate themselves. They parade themselves as clowns. That was Ben Hodges, Tukin, Tukelak. This is, I mean, these idiots, and I am on record. There are still many good officers, especially colonel type level, you know, operational officers who, there are good soldiers in U.S. Army, Armed Forces, U.S. Navy. So, but these morons, they go out and they parade United States completely as, I mean, it's a circus. They don't even understand that they humiliate their own country. They humiliate their armed forces, which already have their reputation pretty much very severely damaged, to put it mildly. And so when we see this, this is ridiculous. This is
here's the problem, Andre. Here's what you say that they don't know that they're embarrassing themselves. The problem is there's others who also don't know. And when you hear President Trump and Vice President Vance make statements, and these are the guys they see on TV, and they see them over and over. Add Jack Keane to that. And I think maybe they do believe them. And the reason I say that, here is the Vice President of the United States talking about the possibility of sending Tomahawks to Ukraine.
Yeah. Our simple message right now, the Russians are not gaining a lot. This war is terrible for their economy, and they have to ask themselves how many more people are they willing to kill for very little military advantage.
But would you be okay with them having Tomahawk missiles?
It's something the president's going to make the final determination on. What the president is going to do is what's in the best interest of the United States of America. I'll let the president speak to it, but I know that we're having conversations this very minute about that issue.
Okay, so whether that's just for public consumption in America or whether that's what they actually believe, I can't say. But the fact that it's even in the conversation, what do you say to that?
J.D. Vance was a corporal in Iraq who was so-called journalist. He doesn't understand, obviously, technological dimension of Tomahawk, because in order for Ukraine to have Tomahawk missile and launch it, let's imagine that they make this decision. United States has to transfer, if he doesn't understand this, which he doesn't. He is technologically incompetent, and he has a degree in law and whatever. So United States, in order for Ukraine to have Tomahawks, has to transfer to Ukraine either B-52 strategic bombers or B-1B strategic Lancer strategic bombers, one of the four strategic missile submarines converted to their SSGN, which is the higher class. First four of them have been converted to carry 172 Tomahawks. Or it has to transfer the Arleigh Burke-class destroyer or the Ticonderoga-class cruiser. If not, then, of course, they can transfer them their so-called Typhoon. What is Typhoon? Typhoon is MK-41 for vertical launch system, which is literally stuck on the wheel chassis. And the United States so far produced two of them. And those two have been sent to basically East Asia, to Philippines and what have you, to contain China. So, I mean, J.D. Vance is playing the imbecile. Pardon me, you know, the guy is not necessarily a bad guy, make no mistake. I mean, I understand. But he is militarily as incompetent as Trump, despite the fact he was corporal in corporal journalist, you know. So, and and Vladimir Putin obviously kind of took the, not bait, he is smart, but he'll say, okay, if they want to let them, but everybody knows there is no way. The only two installations which exist in Europe, which are Devesele, Romania, and in Poland, it's called Aegis Ashore, which is the combination of the essentially Spy 1D radar and a ground-based, same old MK-41 vertical launch systems, which can be loaded with the either SM-2 or SM-6 air defense missiles, or you can stick some Tomahawks. But if any Tomahawk leaves one of those installations, Europe is turned into the parking lot within 20 minutes. It will be simple as that. Washington knows this. So what's left? Again, bluff. But we all remember Trump stated that, he will continue to supply Ukraine for the last 9 months. Didn't work out that well for him, stopping war or convincing Russia to do anything about it.
Yeah, and in fact, you mentioned Putin's reaction to this. Here is one of his comments.
Will this pose damage to our relations, where we see light at the end of the tunnel? Of course, using Tomahawks without direct involvement of the U.S. officers is impossible, which means a brand new stage of escalation, even between Russia and the U.S.
So he has, President Putin has really bent over backwards to allowed the Trump administration for at least being willing to talk to him, as opposed to the previous administration. And he has maintained all the way through. And even here in the aftermath of this public discussion about using Tomahawk missiles and escalating from the United States side, he still is trying to stay positive, but he said this could really harm and set back relations. What do you make of his comments here, Valdai?
Oh, no, absolutely correct. Ukraine, there is no chance in hell that Ukraine can have Tomahawks. We know this. But if somehow they decided Tomahawks, for example, let's say United States produces another two, Typhoons, and delivers it to Ukraine, it's going to be an American operation. It's going to be operation by Pentagon. Nobody allows Ukrainian personnel anywhere near Tomahawks, which potentially are, although they could be a strategic asset, especially if you can screw on, it remains to be seen what is there, the warhead, which is nuclear. So Russia, yeah, he absolutely stated, then it's war, basically, between clash between the United States and Russia. But that's why we can hear only those words from J.D. Vance, who doesn't understand what he's talking. He doesn't. He has no grasp of it, you know, in terms of how technologically it could be achieved. Putin does. But he made, so to speak, that he put the red flag or red line there. And I'm pretty sure Trump knows it. But if they will decide to obviously go for that, yeah, it's going to be a direct attack of the United States on Russia. So far.
That's a pretty heavy statement right there, actually. And that's not lost on other Russian leaders, too. Dmitry Medvedev actually was he's talking a lot about these alleged Russian drones that are flying all over Europe. And he said in a post on his Telegram channel, Medvedev said it doesn't matter who actually launched those drones over Germany, Denmark, Norway, and other European countries. He said, quote, "The main thing is that narrow-minded Europeans feel on their own skin what the danger of war is, so that they're afraid and tremble like dumb animals in a herd driven to slaughter." He's never been very subtle about a lot of these kinds of things.
No.
But I mean, the bigger issue, it seems to be standing valid in that he's saying that this can go in a bad direction. Is that just rhetoric that's coming from Medvedev? Would Russia consider actually engaging in direct fire with the West?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what many people, again, you see, once you get into this business of those headlines, the larger picture and the true picture begins to get lost. Gerasimov and general staff, this was one of the instructions. He's not just fighting their special military operation. He is preparing Russia together with the other ministers, including their industry ministers, which Mr. Manturov is in charge of. They are preparing Russia for the global war, and especially war on the European theater. And the task of Gerasimov is when he leaves his post, which he, by the way, he tried. His service was extended another 5 years by order of Vladimir Putin about a couple of weeks ago, and that he shapes the military, which will be untouchable for until at least 2050. And
I want to ask you a question on that point right there. There has been some analysis that I have seen that shows that Russia is either at or will be in the next couple of months the production of the new Garand 2s, somewhere around 1,000 per day.
Yeah.
They have been, and same thing with, but not the same thing, but a similar increase in the production of lots of armored vehicles, the fixing of a lot of the older ones, the upgrading of several others that have been in storage. And yet we almost, in fact, it's been reported here recently that you hardly ever see any Russian armor vehicles anymore. Now it's almost all motorcycles, buggies, and whatnot.
Whatever.
But the point being that, and this is what I'm asking, is Russia building these things and stockpiling them up in large percentages in the event, not that they fight anymore against Ukraine, but against the West?
Well, first, the first thing which has to be dispelled, Russian army is omnipresent on the front lines. It's just that on the close tactical strip, which is usually depending on the 5 to 7 kilometers, width, they operate primarily from the closed fire positions, including, by the way, the latest, many people don't know, this famous Terminator vehicle, okay? They said, oh, yeah, it has been removed. No, not only it has been removed, it has not been removed, but actually it was ramped up. And Russians, obviously, as any people who think strategically, they also stockpiling things for if, God forbids, it comes down. Passum parabellum. You want peace, prepare for war. And Russians operate on the strategic assumptions, which are correct, that at some point of time, those idiots in Europe, like today, Russian Foreign Service, warned about Britain, United Kingdom, trying to conduct their false flag, which they will again, you know. So that's the only thing they are capable of. They need to, those regimes in Europe, considering the economic state in Europe, which is pathetic, and they are shaking. You know, you can take a look at the actually approval ratings of those Merz, Starmer, Macron. They are in single digits now. They need to grab onto their power, their cowards. So in order to stay in power, they will go to any kind of their provocation. So, and Russians understand that they might go out of control. So the idea, strategic idea, is that's what is happening right now. For Putin, he works with Trump to isolate United States from Europe in the sense that militarily, if this is happening, it is already happening. United States is not providing. That's why Kellogg is, you know, so desperate. The stream of the U.S. supplies is very, you know, narrowed from the river to a creek, really. And it's going to get even worse than that. And if those Europeans, and many of them are already, because they're morons, the European elites are militarily incompetent, they're geopolitically incompetent, if they go for any kind of the serious provocation, for example, like they want today, the SVR, Russian Foreign Service, worried about that they have those Russian so-called refugees, you know, the opposition, which they want to, you know, present as the Russian troops and assault some kind of the European tanker and say, oh, you see, that's what Russians do. That's what British do. They are militarily incompetent and pathetic, but they do those things. And it might escalate. So when it does escalate, God forbid, what are you going to do? Well, Europe must die. It's going to die. Simple as that. And this is why Vladimir Putin, again, the critical things are not Tomahawks. We know that this is all bluff and, you know, what hot air from Trump administration. The main thing he spoke on Valdai, he said, oh, no, Oreshnik is just one of things. The new ones are coming. And so these are the things are capable, which is the conventional or nuclear, strikes. Yeah, that's Terminator. Yeah, they continue to deliver them in droves now, and it's all ramping up. And basically, the picture which is being drawn in the West, primarily through GUR, which is the intelligence and government in Kiev, and through British media and through American media, is completely perverted picture. It doesn't even reflect in 10% of the reality on the ground and what is happening.
Now, I'm sorry, Andre, could I ask you, what is this Terminator vehicle, for those who may not know? What does that actually do?
It's the combat vehicle of support of the tanks. It carries all kinds of the nasty things. It's net-centric now, the latest versions, which are being delivered now.
Was it unmanned?
No, it's two people there. It's unmanned turret. It has dual 30 millimeter. It has all kinds of things now with the anti-drone defense. It has the upgrade armor on the sides, and it has the Carnet or any other latest ATGMs, as you can see yourself. And it looks like a Wally. People, it's Wally from hell, you know, the Wally.
And yeah, it looks a little more angry than Wally.
Yeah, so, and it has all other things there, including their, people love it. Russian army loves them, you know. And so after first run, the first batch, there were, I don't remember how many of them, there were 24, I believe. They went through their first couple of years of their special military operation. They pulled them back. The first ones have been upgraded, and the new batch is already kind of the new vehicles. It's much more advanced in terms of this tactical awareness and new comms communication systems, new everything.
Okay, I'm sorry. I want to go back a little bit because something you just said was pretty profound. In that if there is a conventional clash between the West and Russia, is that the Europe was must die, you said, I think was the phrase that you used there.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Implying that Russia is already thinking in those terms and presumably building up an arsenal that would be able to manifest that on the ground. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, if something happens, there is a Russian military doctrine which describes it absolutely. Articles 26, 27, you can use. So in the end, if Europe decides somehow, first, we know that operationally speaking, there has to be assembly areas. They have to build up force, which they cannot. But if something happens, Russia has no impediments and basically wiping out a military political top of the West.
What do you say to those folks who say, yeah, but okay, Russia, they're basically by themselves. Maybe they'll have some help from North Korea a little bit, but otherwise it's Russia and North Korea, and we'll just leave China out for the moment against a 32-member alliance. That's what people say out loud. But what do you say from your analytical perspective on the ground? What is that equal to?
To nothing, pretty much. French are struggling to field General Schill, the chief of the general staff of French army, just 2 days ago, to speaking to the Valour media, to France, he stated that, yeah, we are ready to field these 5,000 troops, you know, the whole brigade, and maybe soon we're going to be able to build up the 25,000 troops, the thing which is the division with all support units. Yeah, Russians are quaking the votes from them. It's funny. They cannot build enough even combat aircraft. Let's say France, which is the more advanced. You look at Bundeswehr, it's a joke. They don't have force there at all. You look at UK, they cannot have a single combat-ready brigade to do anything about it. If they think that they somehow can whip up, which they can, European population for the most part, not all, but for the most part is brainwashed and they hate Russians. They always hated them. But if they whip them up in this hysteria, okay, let's do the, let's say, the mobilization. Whom they going to get there? The guys who, we're not going to go into the qualities of the soldiers, which they made. What they will be them arming with. Furnishing them with equipment, something which
well,
can
that, go. That's what I was going to ask you specifically about, because there was a really great piece about a year and a half ago in the Royal United Services Institute, which talked about that in a conflict of attrition, in a war of attrition, it's a lot less about the troops and the tactics. They said even generalship is subordinate. What matters for the winning and losing is the industrial capacity and the ability to bring enough men on the board. And in that regard, it seems to me, you correct me if I'm wrong, but because of the last 2.5 nearly 3.5 years of war, I guess over 3.5 years of war now, that the Russian side industrially is cranking at a very high rate. And apparently, according to some satellite imagery that was shown a month ago, that's continuing to expand. But meanwhile, on the entire Western side writ large, there is incremental increases over what we had in 2022. And if a war suddenly broke out, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, from take your Russian hat off, just your analytical hat, which side can win a war of attrition if it stays conventional?
Europe cannot win the war of attrition, simple as that. And we are talking about here suddenly a tactical and operational. Europe doesn't have effective air defense, like at all. All those family of the Aster 30, missiles and whatever they place there and all, it performed dismally in special military operation. They cannot produce enough, and Europe doesn't have industrial capacity to do that. When you kind of begin to add things up, they simply have no ramp up capability unless they go full 1984, declare them basically the coup, whatever you want, you know, and they become the concentration camp when they, you know, basically corral those masses, you know, into some kind of the military industrial things, but they don't have the expertise. Europeans lost the arms race much worse than United States lost the arms race. And as a result, what many people do not understand, there is not necessity today to do what it was like World War II. No, Russia can sustain attrition. Just to give you an example. This is the grossly inaccurate in the sense that it's not very precise, but it is totally correct in terms of the order of magnitude. In 1,315 days of war, Russia produced 131,000 air defense missiles of all kinds. Russia outproduces in terms of standoff and weapons, which Europe, by the way, doesn't have, order of magnitude together with the United States combined. And so she can ramp up those things even more. But it has to be understood tactically today with the long-range fires what Russian army has. And Mr. Patrushev stated 2 days ago, without any kind, it's the best army in the world, period. You know, and I agree with him, not because I'm Russian, but because they cannot destroy Russian military political leadership. Russia can wipe out all of them, all their governments, within first half an hour.
So it took Russia, and you correct me if I'm wrong, somewhere between a year and a half to 2 years to really go from a standing start, if you will, from what existed in February 2022 until they were at a decent production rate, right?
Yeah.
That's my understanding. How long would it take the West if there was a shocking development tomorrow and all of a sudden we're in a full-scale conventional war? How long would it take from a flat start before we could be able to produce enough equipment to say, all right, we can now hold our own?
Well, that's the issue. Well, if Russians do nothing like Saddam, you know, and allow Europe to continue with that, 7 years maybe. So,
and you say if Russia doesn't do, if they did like Saddam, but Russia, you're saying they wouldn't, and what would they do instead?
I mean, if there are a number of the scenarios. Obviously, I'm not privy to modern views of the general staff of how this could be done. But the point is, Russia can completely stop any kind of the hydrocarbons to Europe, and that will be it. You cannot produce anything when you do not have energy. Modern warfare requires enormous amount of energy, and Russia sits on the more than 30% of the world resources in terms of energy, while Europe has nothing. And United States is not, it comes back to what we started with when we were talking about that United States cannot provide even liquefied natural gas, as Trump promised, because United States doesn't have enough facilities, right, and it has to have its gas for itself. And so as the result, United States will not be able to support Europe. Simple as that. And even this preposition force, which is 52 large displacement ships or vessels, which supposed to bring U.S. Army, in order for combined West to fight Russia as it exists today, they have to have about 5 to 7 years to ramp up production. They have to have shipping lanes of communications uninterrupted. They will have to allow U.S. Navy and things like that, you know, with the preposition force to provide continuous flow of the supplies to Europe, which Russians will close the, you know, close off the, you know, the crane essentially, and that will be it. Europe cannot produce anything. It doesn't have the proper industrial capability. It was so deindustrialized together with United States that, yeah, Europe is in a horrendous shape. And as the result, there are all kinds of the strategic considerations and operational considerations, including will Russia be able to somehow stir the trouble if, for example, if we imagine that Vladimir Putin is Saddam Hussein and he looks, you know, sitting in Kremlin and general staff look at this and build up and says, oh, nothing happens. No, Russia will be able to conduct some kind of the clandestine operations, undeniably so. But if it comes down to it, it has to be understood. Neither United States, let alone Europeans, have any air defense or, for that matter, any kind of the hideout where they can hide their military political leadership. For example, the NATO armies, which, by the way, was supported by none other than people in the U.S. Naval War College, or not Naval, Army War College parameters, 2 years ago. It was called Lessons from the War in Ukraine. Already then, they stated that Ukrainians cannot have even their command posts in the same place. They have to jump two or three times a day. And they said, the implications, how do you command and control this NATO force when you have to have the command post, you have to have headquarters, which are serious installation and which emits in the electromagnetic spectrum constantly, because otherwise, how, what, you're going to use semaphore or something like that? Well, guess what? It's target immediately. Targeting is, it's detected, targeting immediately developed, and then Mr. Oreshnik or Mr. Iskander flies in, and that's it. And you lose what? Command and control of division. You lose command and control of core. So what's what you have to do? You have to do it somehow. Being mobile, it's impossible. You can do mobile battalion or regiment type of the command post, which is mobile. You stick them into those vehicles. What are you going to do when it's division? What are you going to do when it's core? You have to dug in. You have to sit in the operational rear, which before that was safe. It's not safe anymore. There is no safe zones, period. There's no strategic safe zones. So, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah. And so that should paint a picture to anyone, to make them very sober, that the most foolish thing we can do is get into a conventional war with Russia. That, I mean, even conventional. But the question is, and the biggest fear for mankind, not any one country, in the event that there's a conventional clash, however small, even if it's somehow limited to the periphery or the eastern flank of NATO, what are you, how would you characterize the risk and the danger, both for Russia and for the West, to avoid a nuclear escalation? And what would you put that percentage at, regardless of who might start it?
That's why Trump and Putin talk. That's why Putin talks. And we know for a fact that there are, behind the closed doors, constant consultations between Americans and Russians. We know this. It's a fact. Cold, hard fact. Nobody denies it. There is constant back and forth. And I believe that's, I even made a video about it. Considering that Trump is a very impressionable man, to put it politely, Russia offered the United States a lot. It has happened months ago when Putin stated, he stated that we have so much in common. We have common border. We have Alaska, gigantic Alaska resources for the United States. And the United States needs Russian technology, especially icebreaker fleet and the liquefaction, Arctic liquefaction technology. So let's do it. It's enormous wells there, you know, and on the northern slope of Alaska. So there is a lot of back and forth between Russia and Americans. But in terms of Europe, Russia is done. It's the fact. Mm. And here is the issue. There are two superpowers, Russia and United States. They can obliterate the world 11 times over. In one is enough, but 11 times over is just insane. So they, both countries bear responsibility to basically preserve humanity and allow human civilization to move forward. And that's what is being discussed. For Europe, Europe is now singled out as the separate strategic entity. And if need be, on the grander scale of things, Russians for the first time are ready, unlike it was during the Soviet times, to sacrifice Europe for anything. Because it has to be between Russia and it is. There are two big dogs. They don't care about chihuahuas. They need to figure out how to handle this, that we do not slide into the nuclear conflict, God forbid. Especially considering the fact, which I am on record for many years now, United States is nuclear-biased military. You know, it's, we had all this situation with MacArthur. We remember during Korean War, he wanted the nuclear warheads, you know, bombs. We had in Vietnam when there were a lot of calls to use their nuclear weapons. So Russians understand this. They can defeat militarily United States or NATO combined. But the escalation will start immediately to the nuclear threshold. So in this case, it is only up to Russia and United States, which, by the way, Trump, yesterday, I think he said, "Oh, I look favorably on this start, you know, strategic offensive weapons favorably." Good. Let's start with this. Russia does have their immense advantage in terms of delivery systems, but Russia's not going to use it. Everybody knows this. So let's negotiate these strategic things, and then, and Russian stated, then factor in French and British into this. British are easier because obviously United States really controls their limited small arsenal. But French, well, it's it's the whole other story. So yeah. And that's what it is. I mean, there is no way United States and Russia are not talking. They have to.
Well, thank God for that. I hope it never even gets to that point. But the last question I got for you, reverting back to the conventional phase for a moment, because kind of as I see things, and obviously I pay a lot of attention to this on a daily basis, I get the feeling that we are sliding dangerously close to like sleepwalking into a war, just like we did in World War One. Different reasons, but the similar mentality is going on. And I fear that we are sliding into that possibility. What do you think? What is your, if you had to give a number percentage wise, what do you think the chances are that this war will eventually escalate into Russia West conventional clash?
I won't put it very high, but it's not insignificant. Let's put it this way. It's non-trivial, obviously. And again, if it happens, God forbid, it's going to be primarily, I think, that's what is the idea. And fact is, there are a number of the American people in D.C. who think it's going to be okay that United States kind of stays away and Russia finishes off Europe. And that could happen. But again, what is the percentage? 30, 35%? It's not very high, but it's not trivial either.
So I can see where, like, if an unexpected war were to break out in the near term, that Russia, whether it's Reshniks or the hypersonics, the Garand 2s and whatever, their whole host of these things, that they could cause profound damage. But I mean, even Russia would have to mobilize several million people, 4 or 5 million, I would imagine. How long would that take?
2.5 million reserves are immediately ready. It's very fast, within a month. Because don't forget, it was also rotational. There are many people who are literally it's immediate strategic reserve, mobilization reserve. The rest of it, I think, it's as usual, half a year, but it will be over before that in terms
let me ask a different question here, because I think that this is a very, very important thing to assess. As of now, it occurs to me that Russia primarily wants to win the special military operation, achieve their objectives, and end the war, whether negotiation or whether taking it on the battlefield, and then bring peace to the entire European continent. That's what I perceive as the preference.
No, of course, yeah. That's absolutely accurate. Yeah.
Okay, so, but then on the other side, you have the Europeans almost uniformly saying that, no, that's not what their objective. Their objective is territorial conquest. It's 1938, and unless we provide help for Ukraine right now, we're all going to be next. I fear a situation to where we will almost lay the foundation that will draw Russia beyond what they want to do into something where then they may actually do that. How do you see that dynamic?
I do not believe this to be true, because we have to understand the veracity.
Which part do you not seem to be true?
There is obviously the always possibility that something happens which losing control. But as we already stated about Europe, in order for you to do something, you have to have the capability. You have to have forces and means. Europe simply doesn't have any, and it doesn't have industrial capacity to do this. And here is the issue, which is very, very interesting. Jeffrey Sachs, who knows Macron personally, he was on the record. In fact, I'm not sure, was he on Judge Knapp or on your show? Jeffrey Sachs, when he talked to Macron, Macron admitted to him that, it was NATO expansion which triggered all that. So they do understand that. This was a very important private admission which Jeffrey Sachs actually, brought to us, to our attention. That means, are they shaking? Yes, they are shaking from fear. Medvedev is absolutely correct. While they're continuing to push, produce this hot air, Europe simply has no capability to do anything about it in terms of, let's start the war. With what? That's the most important question. What do you have to start the war with, especially as after the combat and operational and strategic experiences of the special military operation? They simply have nothing to...
Now, I know this question may be impossible for you to ask. You'll have to really speculate a lot. But let's say that the unimaginable did happen and that there was a conventional clash through whatever means. What would, if we know what Russia would have to accomplish the special military operation, because they've defined that in very clear terms, what would they have to define a success in a conventional against the West? Would it be going to Paris? Would it be, you know, pushing out to the end of, well, I mean, if the West went to war, how far would Russia go to call it a success?
Wipe out the military political leadership of the West. Simple as that. Brussels.
That's not very simple, though. That's pretty substantial.
No. I mean, it's substantial, but the point is, everybody knows where those bunkers are. Everybody knows where the headquarters of NATO are. Everybody knows what 10 Downing Street is. Everybody knows where Yelisei Palace is. Everybody knows it's all there. Fixed targets. Everybody knows where the bunkers are. There is nothing which can stop things like Oreshnikov Zircon. Simple as that. And the moment it starts, there will be the complete destruction of the command and control on the highest, starting from the highest political level. Simple as that. Because, you know, in fact, is again, if you read attentively Russian military doctrine, Article 26 and 27, it states very clearly, if there is a danger for the existence of the Russian state, Russia reserves the right to use nuclear weapons. But I think that Russia is not going to use nuclear weapons because, you know what, if some Parisians will get up in the morning and find there is no Elysee Palace there together with the French politicians, maybe people will applaud that, you know, and I'm pretty sure they will. So, and that's the whole thing.
Right. But what if they don't? What if instead they have a succession plan? They just have it, and then they say, that's it. We're all in a war now.
I mean, military command and control will be completely disrupted. I mean, the military, yeah,
for sure.
You cannot have succession for example. Well, you have the chain of command and, you know, the succession, obviously. But, for example, does Russia know where the, let's say, French Navy is based? Of course. Does Russia know what is happening in Berlin? Yes, Russians do. So, and do they know where those headquarters are? Do they know where those airfields are? Easy. That's the whole point. If the war as we know it is not there anymore, there are no armadas of the, you know, what those aircraft, you know, granted, the European air forces are pathetic and a joke. So the only air force on NATO part which is substantial and powerful is obviously United States Air Force. But other than that, what's going to happen? They will be hit, and that's the whole thing. They can try to hit something back, but then comes this issue of the strategic air defense, strategic anti-missile defense, which Russia has best in the world, and they don't have any. S-30, even the most, you know what, advanced, you know, air defense complexes, they're not gonna intercept Kinjals, they're not gonna intercept Oreshnik, they cannot intercept anything. They will not be able to intercept even the salvo of the supersonic, forget about hypersonic missiles. And that's the whole thing. And evidently Macron understands it, and he at least has some degree of the understanding of the reality, considering the extremely low intellectual level of the elites in the West. Fact is, I think most likely what's going to happen if they somehow want to go to war with Russia, even despite the fact that majority of the European population is brainwashed and always hated Russians. But the point is, nobody wants to fight in Europe. That's the other thing. Well, if they want to mobilize, it's like, can you imagine now if somebody begins to mobilization in the United States? Oh boy, counter culture of 1960s with Vietnam will be like stroll in the park compared to what is going to happen. And so if they think that they can mobilize people, apart from the material part of things, you know, which is against forces and means and training, which is pathetic. I saw there how they train. It's ridiculous. It's laughing stock of the, you know, combat training in NATO. It's just the fact that, okay, try it and see what's going to happen with the population of Europe, which, and for example, go try to recruit all those Arabs and Africans in, for example, France. They didn't go to fight there to fight for France. They went there to what? Get the benefits of this the state. Which so I mean, come on, let's be serious. How they cannot put together even division. And France is considered as they this dude, Schill, can you believe it, name Schill, General Schill said, we're the greatest land force in Europe. Russians, yeah, so.
Hey, we say the same thing. We have the greatest military by far than anyone else on the planet. Both Hegseth.
United States has an excellent navy. It's an excellent navy, no doubt. Yeah, United States is a naval power primarily. And even today, for all its gigantic, there are gigantic problems. But you look at the submarine force of the United States Navy, it's an impressive force. It's world class.
It is. Know? It is. Both of, and our Air Force, too. But the Achilles heel, and you tell me if you disagree, is our ability to sustain anything, whether offense missiles. I mean, those platforms are fabulous, but if you don't have any bullets to shoot or missiles to fire.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And for example, Tomahawks, which, oh, by the way, the United States has very few of them, they are obsolete missiles. JASSMs, yeah, same pretty much thing, you know. U.S. Air Force, yeah, half of it is essentially grounded in F-35, but it is obviously a very good Air Force, no doubt about it. And so when you look at that, I mean, there are some formations in U.S. Army which are good, you know. So we can talk about Marines, or we can talk, which is not Army, but in Army there are some, you know, the armored division.
Land forces. There are some good ones, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like it's, yeah, especially when you look at purely operational, tactical operational level, there are still very good forces, but there are not enough of them, and they won't be able to sustain them. And that's the whole point. And this goes back to famous one-liner that while amateurs discuss tactics, professionals discuss logistics. You know, so and that's what I'm trying to convey for so many years. That guys, look at this picture. Apart from the technological dimension of the modern war, which is so complex, and yes, you don't have hypersonic and supersonic weapons. You have nothing. You have to have the top-notch air defense, and we saw. I don't want to go there. And their effectiveness, as already stated, combat effectiveness of the whatever remains in terms of around Kyiv primarily, of the not Ukrainian, it's NATO air defense. There's nothing. So it's hovering between 10 and 12%. That's what it is.
Right. Against even so, the five it was. But well, listen, I really appreciate this. I know we went long today and I just kept on dragging your questions out. But, really, really appreciate it. This has been a pretty frank discussion and something that every opinion leader and especially political leader in the United States and the West needs to watch this show because they need to understand the core hard facts about what goes into making war and where we are in that calculation. And that needs to then inform our policies and then everybody can live a lot better, I think, if they listen to that. So you have provided such clarity on that, and I'm really appreciative. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, Danny. It's my pleasure.
And as a reminder to send everybody to Smoothie X12, if you just can't get enough of Andre Martiano, if you don't have to wait, you can go to his channel every day and see what new videos he's got there. All right. Well, perfect. Well, thanks again for coming on. Look forward to having you back real soon.
Sure.
We appreciate you guys. Be sure and like and subscribe if you haven't, and we will look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning. I do want to point this out. I don't often do kind of a commercial for my own show, but at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning on the two-year, I don't say anniversary, that almost sounds positive, on the two-year mark of the October 7th, 2023 terrorist attack, which has unleashed holy hell in the Middle East and certainly for the Palestinian people. It is not quite the way you're going to see on probably 95% of everything in the media tomorrow. We are going to show you the real story, the true story of the lead up to 10/7. There's going to be everybody else is going to tell you what happened on that day and regurgitated. I'm going to tell you what led up to it and why, one of the reasons why it probably happened, which will then inform to where this is going to go here. Matthew Ho is going to be joining us in the backside of that to talk about what all this means going forward. Definitely don't want to miss this show. It's going to be a big one. Thank you very much, folks, and we'll see you tomorrow on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.